All right, we're really going to go there. Yes, we are really going to go there. Why not? We got a question from one of our listeners on the Bite Me group page on Facebook. The Croker conundrum. Look, a hot button issue, but worth discussing, worth thinking about. You know, that's what I normally do in my day job on the radio and as a writer. You just want people to think about it. All right, so we're going to get there, but we got a great show for you tonight, today, whenever you're listening to it. John Lopez across from me, as always, is Captain Scott Null. And we got the band back together, just like the Blues Brothers. Captain Caleb McCumber is back as well. He must be bored or his wife must have thrown him out, but he is here. We're going to talk a little bit of catch and release as well. Are trout patterning or not, and what's going on there? Chasing jacks on the fly, everything you know to need to know about summer jetty fishing. We're going to help you catch more fish, but we are going to at least make you think about this, because we got a great question, late addition to this week's podcast, by the way. And before we dig into that, just a reminder to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, on Spotify, on iTunes, on Google Podcasts, on anything that has podcast, the Bite Me podcast. You'll get those notifications. My daughter told me the other day, she goes, Dad, I got to be honest, I only listen about once every 4 or 5 episodes, but I get the notification all the time, so I click on it. Thank you. That's one click just for my daughter right there. All right, Captain Scott, Caleb, I'm calling it the Croker Conundrum, and I'm going to read the whole question here because it just piqued my interest, and we hadn't talked about this in a while. I'm going to start with Captain Scott. I think Caleb has a really good counterpoint here, but here's the question. Hey, I'm a new listener and would characterize myself still as a beginner fisherman. I've heard a few episodes where you and Captain Scott are anti-croaker as live bait, but I haven't heard you explain why. I want to be a responsible fisherman, but do not appreciate the hostility to croaker. Now, I don't know if he was being, facetious, funny, or dead serious, like, hey, you stay away from my croaker. But he said he was a beginning fisherman. So, Scott, we've talked about it. People know where we stand. I also tell people, I get it. Some people fish with that. But it's just a matter of information. How would you begin to answer that question?
It's not hostility to croaker. Let's get that out in the front. It's growing up, I caught croaker. That was one of our mainstays, especially in the fall. Golden croaker run. Me and Dad go down there, sit at the Texas City Dyke all night, just catch a ton of big croaker. I'm talking
nice
2-3 pound croaker.
Shoulders like a redfish.
Yes, like little miniature redfish. Mm-hmm. Like a 14 to 16, 18-inch redfish.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even bigger at times. They would also hit lures. There were many, many times wading in the back lakes where the redfish are and yep. where we're catching trout and reds, and just get your spoon slammed. And if you don't think something hits hard, a big old bull croaker will just hammer it. I mean, they'll take drag. They fight just as hard as a redfish.
Yeah.
They should be a sport fish, in my opinion. They hit lures. They're good eating. I mean, we ate the heck out of them.
That was our go-to.
It's a redfish. It's mm-hmm. a redfish without a dot that just doesn't get as big. But it suddenly became a bait. And now, when's the last time you caught a big croaker?
Well, remember, it was a one-off.
You caught one.
It was a one-off about, 3 or 4 months ago by now?
Yep.
I was fishing on a back lake, and for those who weren't listening, I'll just tell the story real quick. I thought I had a drum. It looked like a black drum in the water coming to me, and it was fighting like one. And I pulled it out, and I think, what did I say? It was like 21, 22-inch, yeah. A big, fat, giant croaker.
No, those were normal.
And I'm like, this is a throwback.
Yeah.
And figuratively.
Yeah, those were normal back, 70s, 80s. That's what we caught. We caught a bunch of them. And I mean, you could fill a cooler with them if you wanted to. Yeah, there was plenty of them. But then they started using them as bait. And now I can't remember the last one that I had hit a lure.
Right.
Honestly, cannot remember. It's got to be more than 10 years.
Well, the one I mentioned was the first to hit a lure in 10 years.
Yeah. And it was It was a common everyday thing. Yeah. I mean, it happened all the time back in the day. So in order for them to be bait, they catch them at those little small sizes. You know, we've all seen them in the bait pens. They're dragging shrimp nets all over the bay, and the bycatch involved in catching enough croaker to supply the weekend warriors out there with their croaker for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine how much bycatch that gets thrown back into the bay dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not healthy for our bays. I just don't feel like it's a healthy thing to be happening for our bays. Yes, they're effective. They catch them. It's BS that trout don't. It's not about them being mad at them because they're spawning or whatever.
That's not.
I don't think that's true mm-hmm. from what I've read and talking to Dr. Stuntz and some other people. It's croaker aren't. They're not raiding nests because they don't nest. Trout don't nest like bass.
Yeah.
So they're free spawners.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hover over a nest and protect their young. Yeah, you know, they just let it loose.
Right.
So that's false. The croakers being pinned to a hook and stuck to the bottom make them an easy meal.
Yeah.
And they're making noise.
They bait. It's like what you do offshore. The bait's looking different. Yeah.
The nickname we call them, barking monkeys. And so it's not really a hostility by me to the guys using it. Maybe it catches some bigger fish. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I have never thrown croaker.
Mm-hmm.
Not once. It just never appealed to me. I'd rather chunk lures. I'd rather fool them than feed them. But my biggest thing on it is how it's affecting the bays, because we're completely screwing up the age class.
Right.
There is an age structure involved in every fishery. That's why we have slot limits. Well, basically, we're taking all these little bitty croaker out before they can grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, that fishery's going to crash because there's not enough adults to keep resupplying.
Right.
I'm no biologist, but I know some of them, mm-hmm. and I've talked to them, and that's a fear that some of them have.
Now, I know Caleb has some strong opinions about this. I think everybody has a strong opinion about croaker. Let me just set up my sort of middle ground point here and toss it to you, Caleb. Just long story short, he said, what's the hostility toward croaker? I have no hostility toward croaker. I'm pro catching a lot of fish. And I think if croaker are in the ecosystem thriving and flourishing like they have even 15 years ago, we're all happier catching them. I'm very much live bait advocate. I don't fish with live bait very much, but I think that live bait should be shrimp, should be cut mullet, should be something that is abundantly plentiful and always plentiful, as opposed to croaker, which, as Scott just laid out, it will diminish. It has diminished the number. We've seen it in what we've caught. So I just want to be clear, because people get so upset and riled up about it. I want more croaker. I want them on the end of my hook, big, nice croaker like the one I talked about. I don't mind live bait fishing. Occasionally, I still live bait fish, but with shrimp or cut mullet or something else, not croaker, because you're hurting a potential game fish, and that ultimately is where I think it should go, and I think it's the discussion that sets a lot of people off. Make it a game fish, and everybody's happy. The bait camps don't go out of business. They will not go out of business. They'll have more shrimp, more other bait, and not as many croaker. And I think it helps the trout population, because Scott said he doesn't think it catches more fish. I do. I do think it's...
Well, in certain situations, yeah. Certain times of the year, certain situations it does.
So your point.
Well, and Scott's not wrong. I've never spent time on a shrimp boat to see this, but one of the biggest croaker throwers in Matagorda went out on a shrimp boat, and he made the comment that they were catching literally thousands of fingerling trout while they were dragging for these croaker.
Yeah. Everything that's out there, you're going to catch it in a net.
Yep. There's definitely a hostility towards croaker. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of it is, and I use this in the definitive term and not the slang term, is ignorance. Mm-hmm. And by definition, ignorance means you just don't know.
Thank you. I say that all the time.
Yeah.
People think it's an insult.
Yeah. No. But what people, they associate the throwing croaker with the guides that are consistently putting up the big piles of dead fish and killing big fish and all that. And it's certainly an effective tool for it. I've thrown croaker three times. The first time was by accident.
Wait, back up.
We're gonna back that up.
Accidentally got on my hook.
We're gonna get to that story. And then one time was a small company tournament, and the guys just that's what they want to do. And this is back before that I would just say no. And then the third time was a tournament down in South Texas where we just knew we didn't have a chance without it. I think there was 267 boats in that thing. We took second stringer, second trout, second red, and fourth flounder.
So you're saying you have a price.
Yeah. Everybody has a price.
But the accidental story is kind of where I tell this story a lot whenever we're talking. Because customers and I, we sit on our boat, and we tell stories, and we talk about stuff. And this is something I get asked about quite often. You know, why?
Sure.
What's your problem with Croker?
Well, we got it directly from a listener on the group page.
And, you know, I don't have a problem with Croker. I really don't. I don't have a problem with using Croker for bait. I don't do it, you know, other than the three times. I don't do it, you know, but in the same sense, I also don't throw shrimp or anything else unless I've got some little kids
or
something.
That's what I do, yeah.
But so... The accidental story goes like this. It's been over 10 years ago now, and one of the big time guys from Galveston gave me a call one day, and he says, "Hey, I've got a tournament coming up, and I'm gonna go out and we're gonna throw plastics. I'm gonna try to find fish for a tournament. You know, would you want to come with me?" Well, heck yeah, you know, yeah. The guy's one of my heroes, so yeah, heck yeah, I want to go. And so I showed up about 4 a.m. and it was just supposed to be me and him. Well, he comes walking in my truck. And he said, "Hey, man, there's a guy, you know, he's last minute. He wants to hire a guide. He wants to hire me. I could really use the money. We still want you to come." I said, "All right, cool. Let's go." He said, "But we're going to be throwing a croaker." And I didn't even know what an actual croaker hook was. And I said, "Well, you know, I don't know much about how to throw a croaker." He said, "Oh, you'll figure it out." And so off we go, you know, and this was probably 30 minutes before daylight. By 7 in the morning, I guarantee you we had caught 100 trout.
Yeah.
Easily. I mean, I'm talking 3 or 4 drifts and had 100 fish in the boat. But one thing I took away from it, because I was like the people that I'm, you know, calling ignorant here in the definitive term. All I'd ever done was read the negative stuff on Too Cool, the negative stuff on Facebook, and all the memes and all that. That if you throw a croaker, you're going to catch a trout deep. She's going to die. She won't make it. Of those 100 fish, 99 of them were hooked perfectly in the corner of the mouth and released, no problem. Easy.
By the way, we're going to get to that in the show, too.
Nothing to it. So in my head, I'm trying to figure this deal out. And it wasn't maybe 2 months later. This was back when I had an office job, and I got paid a lot of money to look at Facebook all day long. And... I'm looking through Facebook and I see another Galveston fella, and somebody's asking how to throw a croaker, and he says that the key to it is when you feel the thump, you open your bell, let the fish run with it. That way she gets it good and deep and you won't lose her.
Oh.
And in my, right then, that's whenever, okay, there's the problem.
That's a real problem.
So the question here was, I want to be a responsible fisherman, but I still want to use croaker. If you feel the thump and set the hook in a timely manner, there's still plenty releasable. I mean, I'm sure you'll get a deep one here and there, but it's the mentality that comes with a lot of the guys that do it that I think give a bad name to the group as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, in closing, really, what I always compare it to is a handgun. A croaker is only as dangerous as the person using it, just like a handgun is, and that's just the way I see it.
I go back to the fishery. I want to be able to catch, and maybe it's a touchstone to my youth. Like Scott was saying, man, we used to go to the surf, we used to go to the bays, and we would just be hammering.
Caleb's young enough, he didn't get.
I never had that. Yeah. I have involved. No idea what you're talking about.
Big, beautiful croaker.
To me, right now, what a croaker is something, you know, whenever I was throwing shrimp a couple years ago, and the cork went under, we set the hook, and it came up, and it was a 6-inch croaker, and we were all mad about it. That's what I know about catching croaker.
16 to 20 inch croaker.
Yeah.
Consistent.
And I heard they were delicious.
They're fantastic. Yeah. But you know what else is a really, really good trout bait? Probably better than croaker. Big trout bait.
Where you going, picky perch or mullet with this, or where
little,
are you going?
Little trout.
Oh, you know, we tried that once too.
And you better not have. But I know, but prior to limits and prior to, you know, all the regulations, that's what the old timers used. There's a bunch of them that used baby trout. Mm-hmm. They'd catch them in seines. And they used baby trout to catch really big trout. that's one of the best baits. Trout are very cannibalistic, and that's why they can't raise them in the hatcheries as well. You put a bunch of them in one pen, and you could end up with 10 big ones.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's so, yeah, why don't we use them?
It sounds like you're getting hostile against Scott.
Why don't we just go ahead and use croakers?
I want to be clear about that.
Why don't we use trout?
It's not live bait anti. It's not, having fun. My thing is, and maybe this is just kind of being a snob or whatever, it's also extremely easy. And I like
the challenge. Croaker guys will not believe that. I've had them tell me that, how much of an art it is to using croaker. And I'm sure there are tricks and tips and things.
Maybe easier here is the right word.
You can definitely go out and not catch a single dang trout on it and catch a bunch of hard heads and gaff tops.
Sure.
You can do it with anything.
Easier.
But it is definitely easier. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And so my thing is, and I'm not some purist. I eat fish. I fish with bait when I got kids and whatever on the boat. We've talked about that. I like the challenge of finding the fish and fooling the fish. And even with shrimp, it's fun and it's harder and popping the cork and all that stuff. It's all about, like, my grandkids. If I ever get grandkids, I want to be able to have that fishery.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just directly affecting it. So to go back to the question, that he asked, he's not real, does not appreciate the hostility to croaker. Absolutely no hostility. In fact, I'm a big croaker fan. I no hostility toward the croaker. I think there's other ways to do it. And I think there's progress, too. I think more people are falling in line, Scott, with our line of thinking. Maybe even more so after the freeze, where you're like, man, there's something going on out there. We're not catching as many fish. You know what I mean?
At some point, you got to decide. We're in it for sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that sporting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, you can make an argument both ways, I guess. But
yeah, we're going to get put in podcast jail.
No.
It's like I said, but we just want you to think.
Yeah.
If you're adamant about it, I know you're going to stay with it. I mean, but limits, if you understand our point of view, hopefully you'll start to maybe throw more live shrimp and mullet and bait and just keep your mind open.
I think part of the problem is, we're more into catch and release. Keep enough for dinner. Mm-hmm. And what I witness pretty regular at the cleaning tables and on the water is croaker guys are in it for a limit. I see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're not so much in it for catch and release. And I think that's where the divide kind of comes about.
Yeah.
Which is my exact point. It's not the what they're using for bait. It's just the mentality that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly feel like you can be just as responsible with croaker than as you can with a lure. And in fact, a lot of the guys that don't throw croaker and really, really, really beat on croaker people and really, really hate on them for killing a bunch of fish are throwing shrimp with the number 6 treble hook, and that treble hook's getting them deeper a lot more often, and they're still getting put in the box either way. So there is this hostility that only I believe is here. There is that in the fishing community, but it's a bigger picture thing, in my mind.
Okay, you see it all the time. I see it all the time. There are a whole bunch of guides out there who only guide during croaker season.
I'm not arguing that the guys that go spend $100 on croaker keep all their fish. And that's where the stereotype comes
from.
There's
also that aspect. That's where
the stereotype comes from. But if you wanted to, if this fellow that's writing into us wants to be a responsible fisherman but still throw croaker, it is a possibility, is my point.
Yeah. Well, you can do it for sport, pay a little extra for the croaker, hook them right away in the mouth, catch and release.
I'm in no way saying that the piles of dead fish on the cleaning tables are okay.
Right.
I'll never ever say that.
Think about how many guides you never hear from.
All year long. That's no doubt.
It's croaker season.
That's no doubt.
And I mean, I can think of a dozen off the top of my head that you'll never see a picture from them. You'll never see anything. Yeah. And then croaker season comes along, and it's every day they got a picture of a cleaning table full of fish.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the part that I think starts giving it a bad name with a lot of folks, too.
There's little doubt that if croaker were made of game fish and you couldn't bomb for bait anymore, that the guiding community would probably get a lot smaller.
it would thin the herd.
There would be a lot more concrete get poured in the summertime.
Yep. Yeah, there would be. Yep. There would be. All right, so let's help our listeners catch some fish. I thought we handled that pretty well, the croaker discussion. A couple of things to help our listeners real quick while Scott gathers himself. Okay, so scottnullphotography.com is going to have all the Bite Me gear. A couple of texters said that they wanted to get in on that. And so you can go to scottnullphotography.com and get all the hats and the buffs and the shirts and everything else. And you're good to go there. Also, didn't say it last week, and people are jumping all over this, two Bite Me promos for our listeners. See, we help you. We're here for you. We're happy for you. We're trying to help you catch more fish. Start out with Wade Wright, coastalfishinggear.com. You get the Wade Wright belt, back support, rod tube, large box, small box, Madre sling, Wade net, stringer holder, stringer wrap, all that $190 value. You get it for additional 20% off if you just use the BITEME20 code. That's BITEME20. When you go to coastalfishinggear.com, you can get that BITEME combo off as well. And another shout-out to the Boatyard in Kima. My wife, this is an interesting little story. We were just talking about John boats the other day. So my wife had a 14-foot John boat on her playground. She's a school director. The kids would give that boat has been around the world. The kids would be imagining like we're going to Argentina, and they're on the little John boat, you know, having their preschool to kindergarten. You know, yeah. They're having a blast. So somebody donated to. She goes, well, we're redoing our playground. Your school's just starting again. Do you want that John boat? Had two little holes in the hull, so I fixed those. Got me a little motor from the Boatyard. I said, hey, man, especially because my new boat is getting built again. I'm getting another Freedom
you
Warrior.
You stole a boat from kids.
I took a boat from children, from preschoolers. Shame on me. So she goes, hey, do you want this? I was like, yeah. So I fixed the hull. I went to the Boatyard. They got me they had an extra 14-foot boat, John boat trailer. They had a brand new Tohatsu 6 horsepower motor. I wrote them a nice little check, which obviously, you know, the wife approved because she suggested it. So I had a free hall pass. So Sunday morning, I gave it its inaugural, I launched it in old Dead Caney Creek. I was puttering around all over there on that 14.
You didn't sink.
I didn't sink. Was it 3M 5200 or whatever it was called? it worked like a champ with those new bolts. So shout out to the Boatyard for that as well. All right. So let's talk about, this is for you, Caleb. I want to start with you first. Because we had talked about, I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe earlier when you were joining us, we were talking about the trout are just moving a lot. For whatever reason, trout are moving. Is that still the case, and what do you make of it?
I think they're starting to pattern up a little bit better lately. To be fair, I haven't fished in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I took some time off, but I still talk to a lot of people down in Matagorda, and, mm-hmm. and they're starting to show up where they're supposed to be. Daniel told me the other day that he was starting to see some shrimp hopping around on the end of the bay, and there's some birds starting to work that, and they caught some smaller trout underneath them. So they're starting
That's good news.
Yeah, they're starting to kind of get in their late summer, you know, maybe staging a little bit for the fall. We've had real low tides down there, mm-hmm. and those low tides.
Yeah, I was scraping the bottom of that John boat.
Yeah. They'll pull the bait out, but I think they're starting to do more of what they're supposed to, just not as much of them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easier to pattern 15 groups of fish than it is to pattern 3 groups.
Yeah.
So while I think they are working on a pattern, it's a little bit harder to establish because you don't have quite as big of a, you know, an opportunity to find that pattern.
What do you think, Scott? You hearing the same thing?
Yeah, I'm hearing, I don't fish for trout much.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing it from a few really good sources that I trust who had been doing nothing but fishing around the passes and the beachfront.
Right.
And they found some fish on mid-bay reefs
mm-hmm.
This past weekend. So
why do you think it took so long? Just everything? the world. the whole ecosystem has been upside down, and winds and freezes and storms. And
I think the freeze is probably to blame for most of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it thinned the herd.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, quite a bit. And I mean, the Parks and Wildlife came back and said, San Antonio Bay area, we're 40% down.
Mm-hmm.
Take 40% of the fish away, and it gets a little harder to find fish.
It does. So once they start patterning, Caleb, we talk about it. I've had various experiences with being able to get back to that pattern. What's your experience in terms of it just varies how long you can rely on something like that?
You know, I've seen some patterns go on for about 2 weeks here lately. Then they would move out, but they were doing mm-hmm. the same thing somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think that
you got to find the conditions that are similar.
Correct. Because what we experience a lot is, you know, whenever enough people figure out a pattern, well, then everybody else is driving around and they're seeing a wad of boats in one particular area. And then pretty soon that area is getting ran over quite a bit. And so, you know, while they were on, you know, shallow sand for example, they may not be in that area, but they might be on shallow sand a little bit further down. So they're doing their thing. It's just, you know, a little bit harder to find that group of them that's doing it.
Let me ask you both this. I know you've seen this if you've been down in Matagorda, because when I was there Saturday and Sunday, dude, the shrimp boats were practically on the beach.
I love it.
I mean, they were, you could throw a rock and hit them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hadn't seen that.
It's been a couple months of that.
They're shrimping where the shrimp are. I mean, it was. I'm not exaggerating. I could have swam to the shrimp boats.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're right outside the second gut.
So you both of you, I'll start with you again. Yeah. What's going on, and how do you fish those? Just like you would otherwise.
Yeah, I mean they're up close because that's where the shrimp are at.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing's been pretty good in the first and second guts. We've been catching a lot of fish on top waters there. I'm probably going to avoid where the shrimp boat itself is because they've been dirtying up the water pretty badly.
Yeah.
Up and down right there. But that
highway, as we call it.
Right. Well, I mean, they're just telling you where the bait is. And I'm not much of a first and second gut guy. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of groups of customers. That's just what they wanted to do. In mm-hmm. fact, the day we were on those tarpon, I was in the first and second gut. You know, mm-hmm. I'm staring over my outboard out in the deep stuff, but they're catching fish regularly on topwaters. And then I've been just outside of those shrimp boats, though, and because that's where I'm a bull red and jack guy in the surf. That's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And those bull reds and those jacks, they're a little bit further out and pushing in on that shrimp that's on the that's there
right.
close. But what we really found that's been really neat is the king, the lings, mahi, all those fish that usually go out a pretty good ways for,
mm-hmm.
they're there too.
Man, that's awesome.
I took those kids. We had, I don't know, a dozen or more kingfish, had ling the day before, big, big schools of jacks. And then there was another guy that was right close to me. He had two big ling and a mahi right there. And I'm talking quarter mile off of this beachfront.
And that's just the phenomenon, Scott, right? I mean, that's just where the shrimp are right now. I don't know what causes it, but it
happens every year.
What are your thoughts on that approach? Yeah. I do like his idea of you don't want to be right on them because it's already muddying up the water.
Anytime you've got a good shrimp hatch, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And conditions need to get right. You know, we had the freeze.
Yeah.
We don't have as many trout eating as many shrimp in the bays. So more shrimp got out into the Gulf. You know, it was a bigger migration.
Mm-hmm.
The best year that I ever had in the surf was we had had a drought, and then we had a little bit of rain, and the shrimp all hatched out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a flood, and it pushed all the shrimp out of the bay.
Yeah,
and they were all in the surf. I mean, just tons of shrimp. We were walking out in the morning before daylight, and shrimp were jumping up and hitting us in the thighs.
I've had that. They just—you can feel a little. It like hurts. They prick you with the little tail.
But I'm not talking about
nose,
like one here, one there. I'm talking about dozens of them, enough that we were reaching down in the water and picking them up.
Yeah,
you know, grabbing them. And on a year like that, the surf is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That's 100 fish days on lures in the surf.
Yeah,
it happens. You know, it happens every year. But it's a matter of conditions being right for it to be excellent. Think about what we had. We had the freeze, mm-hmm. then we had floods.
So fewer fish.
Fewer fish, more shrimp, and then we had a flood to push them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't remember last year the surf. We didn't have a lot of good days weather wise for the surf.
It wasn't.
But the days that we went out there, it wasn't, you know, very good. In 17, we had a drought, and that year was really good in the surf. This year's been pretty solid. It's been fun. I haven't seen the big schools of Jacks and Reds on top. I have found the Jacks deeper. The Reds is more pairs and triples and singles moving around. You know, I've had one or two days where I was on big schools of redfish, but that hasn't been quite as prevalent. Although I've been told that about 15 miles away from me, the Reds are pretty thick.
All right. Well, that's a perfect transition to the next topic, unless you have another thought on
the Reds and Jacks are going to go more on the mullet.
Yeah.
If you get the mullet in the surf, and that'll usually come here pretty soon.
Yeah. We've been getting the pogies and the shrimp a lot more so than them. There was the day that I recorded that video with Harry and put it on YouTube, that surf video, there was big schools of mullet. Yep. And we were catching some reds and some jacks around.
That'll bring those jacks up on top. That's when you really have the fun with throwing big topwaters at jacks.
Okay. Right. There you go.
Well, that ties in directly to the next question that we had. I don't know who got this one, if you sent this to me or I did, but either way, this one fellow was talking about chasing jacks on a fly. Scott, I know you've done that. What are some of the tips and strategies and tactics if you really want to get that? Because don't you have to? I remember you talking about this once, that you can bring fish up higher to the surface by sort of teasing them. I think you were doing it with snapper, I guess.
Well,
do you do the same thing, or they just come up?
Snapper's a whole different ball game. That's chumming deep and then bringing your chum up, bringing it up. You know, 5-10 feet at a time.
So you can set a record on a fly.
Yeah, and it brings a whole school of red.
Yeah, snapper up.
Red snapper up to the top. It's cheating, but it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, jacks, when I find them and I've got a guy that wants to fly fish for them, it's really hard. Jacks move so daggum fast.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to get a regular lure in front of them sometimes because they're just quick. So what I like to do is I get my guy up on the front, and fly fishing, it's harder to get a quick cast off, you know, versus with a regular rod and reel.
Mm-hmm.
So if I see that my guy can't quite make the cast fast enough to do it, I'll move around, get in front of the jacks. They're coming at us. That's the best way to get them. He tries to make a cast, they're already past us. I'll take a big topwater, biggest, nastiest looking topwater. I've got one that's a big gold, shiny, I think it was a Bagley something. It's huge. I put it on a 8-foot rod, and I can hum that thing across the world. I mean, just chunk it. So when the jacks start showing up, I'll take that thing, no hooks on it, throw it out in front of the school, and start working it back.
Well, just keeping them interested.
And blasting it. Yeah. I mean, there'll be 4, 5, 6 jacks blowing up on it at one time. They're trying to kill it, and they can't eat it, you know, because it doesn't have any hooks. Mm-hmm. They get it in their mouth, and I pull it out.
Yeah,
and so they'll keep coming. And I tell a guy, if you can land it within a 5-foot circle around that's lure,
awesome.
You're going to get hooked up.
Yeah,
and we've done it quite a bit, and it works like a charm. The other way is throwing big poppers.
Mm-hmm.
If it's calm enough out there to where you can handle it with the boat, the problem with poppers on a fly, it's hard to maintain connection to the fly.
Mm-hmm.
If the boat's moving and the wind's blowing, you get so much slack, you can't make it pop. But if you're in the right situation where you can pop it, they will absolutely crush a popper. And that's probably the number one most fun way to catch a jack.
Yeah, I had a doctor, something from Dallas messaged me the other day, and his goal was to come with me to catch jacks on flies down there in Matagorda.
Yeah.
And I was telling him, I said, look, they haven't really been coming up to the surface really well, but what I've had a lot of luck in is the water's been getting clear enough that I can see their yellow tail at about 15 or 20 feet deep.
Yeah.
And whenever I can find that school of them, if I can get something on top, like Scott was talking about, a topwater or a popper, and make enough noise, those fish, they will come up without a doubt, and sometimes a kingfish outruns them to the top.
Yeah.
So right, Scott's dead on.
I don't think
he'd
mind catching a kingfish on a fly.
Yeah, Scott's dead on. They will come up in a jiffy if you can make some disturbance on top of the water.
They're killers, man. Yeah. That's what they're trying to eat. It's funny to watch jacks when they really get into a good school of bait. They're killing stuff and not eating it. I mean, there'll be dead mullet just kind of floating around, or wounded mullet just floating around.
Yeah.
one of them that what I used this year early on, instead of that big ugly topwater, I forgot about that. I used a Russell Lure tuna popper, the real big one.
Yeah.
I can hum it a long ways. And that thing, when you pop it, it throws water a foot, foot and a half in the air. And if you can pop that thing really hard, it'll wear you out. But, man, it'll draw them from everywhere. Even once they go down, you'll have a school get up on top and they blast. You get over to them, they're missing, or they're down deep like Caleb's talking about. You pop that popper four or five times, they're coming up.
See, this is the stuff that our listeners love the podcast for, because that I can just see all of our listeners now, like, out there popping, you know, old topwaters without hooks and poppers and all that. It's like, hey, that's what they said on the podcast. And it works. It absolutely works. It's good to try it right now, too, because, number one, the water's been pretty dang calm. Fishing has been so-so, especially if you're a trout guy. Go out there. Go out there, give it a shot.
Robert and I used that a lot when we were making our YouTube videos. We'll take the hooks off the topwaters. Mm-hmm. And Robert, when he does his stuff, his main goal is just to get eats.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun just to try to keep them from eating it, because you can't do it. You cannot reel fast enough to get it away from those fish. But whenever they do grab it, you get 10, 15 seconds of actual drag screaming. Yeah. I mean, they hold on to it and go.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, if you're not fly fishing, just throw that popper, one of those big. It looks like a bowling pin.
I know the kind
I'm talking about. Yeah. Big concave face, and my favorite's that Russell Lure. It just pops really good. And I had a buddy down last year, I guess it was. He had never caught a jack before. Fished a lot, never caught a jack. And we were out cruising the surf, looking around, and I said, there's a jack. Yeah, I just saw one swirl and a mullet died. And I said, there's jacks right there. And he goes, where? And I see that dark area underwater. He goes, oh, okay. Well, he reached over and grabbed something that had a soft plastic on. I said, no, get that popper. Yeah. He goes, well, they're not eating on top. I said, they will. He kind of looked at me funny. He tummed it out there. I said, pop it hard. He popped it like three times. And three or four different jacks came up all at the same time. That's trying awesome. To eat it at once, knocking each other out of the way.
That's awesome. Hey, you guys mentioned catch and release earlier. So there's another question we got from our listeners about fact or fiction on catch and release. And I think the question was about, you know, the age-old thing. And actually, you posted something on the group page of a big redfish.
Yeah, I was out of Florida.
That had been caught, what, three different times in the span of a couple of months?
In like 28 days. I want to say it was 26, 27, 28 days.
Yeah, that's where I got it from. It wasn't a listener. I remember thinking, I talked to Scott about this.
It was a very distinctive redfish.
Oh, the spots were.
Yeah. And it was three different guys on different trips had caught the same redfish. It wasn't the same guide, so it wasn't like he was fishing the same area and hammering on some fish. But it shows, you know, you hear it all the time. Oh, man, catch and release doesn't work. Those fish are dying anyway.
Yeah.
No, they're not. Yeah, this good proof of it right there. I know I've caught the same redfish many times. In fact, Doug Pike was with me one day. We caught his son was fishing.
Christian. Well, you told the story. Like, I caught that fish.
Yeah, Christian caught this fish. And I said, we caught that fish yesterday. He said, there's no way. And I pulled my phone out, showed him a picture of it. I said, yeah, we caught that fish yesterday. It was about a half a mile away.
Yeah.
Same marsh, but about a half mile away.
And so that goes to show you. So I went down a rabbit hole, Caleb. Once I saw his deal, and I knew I wanted to talk to Scott about this, so I started looking into some reports about salmon and catch and release and freshwater trout and saltwater species. And the one statistic that jumped out. So, and one thing you said, Scott, was anybody who tells you they're just going to die anyway, you know, show them this picture. Well, I kind of went down the rabbit hole, started digging in. If you CPR fish, catch, photograph, release, I forget it. I don't know if it was NOAA, but it was some, you know, organization, some outdoors marine, you know, official government organization found out, and this was in 2019, so it's been a couple of years, that if you release, so anywhere between 4% and 8% of fish, you know, just in the general public are going to die. Some release the fish better than others. Some know how to handle the fish better than others. Some just bang them on the boat and then throw them in the water, and those fish have a less chance. But somewhere between 4% and 8% are going to die. That's not high to begin with. I've seen 25%. According to this, I think it was NOAA, it's not. It's generally 4 to 8%. They said if you can increase it by 1% in this particular area of fish, and I don't know if it was per 100 fish or something like that. Let's say you release 100 fish, and you can increase that survival rate by 1 percentage point over the course of a year. That's 90,000 fish more that you'll have because of that fish surviving and spawning. It's a lot of fish. That's a lot of fish if you catch and release.
Yeah, so outside of NOAA, Dr. Greg Stans put out a podcast, or I say he put out a podcast, him and Chris Bush put out one for the Speckled Truth that I listened to on the way back from Florida. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely amazing. I recommend that anybody go listen to it. And what they were talking about is, I think it was like you said, it was a 4 or 5% mortality rate of fish being released. And the part that I found really interesting, and I'm not gonna hijack all of their talking points here, but what I found really, really, really interesting is they had gotten a bunch of these transponders that they're acoustic transponders, and they were catching fish. They were cutting a hole in their stomach, putting the transponder in it, sewing it up, and I mean, and the time it takes to handle this fish. And turning them loose, and these fish were surviving. They said short of damaging that fish's gills, they said they even took a couple and took towels and wiped all the slime off of them.
Oh, my goodness.
And then took a towel and wiped all the slime off of them again and let them go, and these fish are surviving. They said that the hardiness of a trout is so much more than what we think it is.
No, we wouldn't recommend that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, don't wipe him clean, but it's an hour podcast, and it is specifically addressing the issue of how well do these fish revive, how well it works, and it was incredibly eye opening. They even covered one of the things that I've seen a lot is the people using the bogas are breaking their jaws, and if you hold it up to get its weight and take a picture, you're killing the fish, and that wasn't even factual. In fact, they recommended that that's what you use is a boga.
You're not touching them as much.
Yeah, I mean, they said obviously don't you just hang it up in the air forever, but getting a weight on or anything is fine. But that it was really eye opening because I see that argument a lot. Well, that fish you turn loose is going to die anyway. You might as well just keep it whenever they're actually doing studies and putting ways to track these fish into their stomach, sewing them up. You know, all the handling, let them go. The transponders, they think they said they're $700 or $800 a piece. So if that fish dies, they're out that money.
The dice. Yeah, they were.
Yes. So it was very eye opening.
Well, the Dr. Stunt's been doing this for a while, and there was another one that he did on the one of the big trout tournaments down there in Baffin, and he had cages that were set up in the canals on the houses on Padre Island. Mm-hmm. I remember right, that's where he was. And they took a bunch of the fish that they had weighed in at the tournament. So we're talking about fish that were caught while wade fishing, put on a stringer, carried around all day, put into a live well, brought to a weigh-in, taken out, weighed, held up on stage, then put into another live well to be transported, and then he put them in these pens. And it was an incredible amount. I want to say it was 90-something percent survived. I mean, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of handling. But what gets me is watch everybody that says, you know, they die anyway. They're throwing them back like hand grenades.
Right. Well, that's I was going to get to as well, but I know you got another point.
They're getting these little trout, and they're mad because they're little, and they're not big enough to keep, so they're throwing them
just
back.
Just do that with hard hits.
They're humming them. I mean, they're, you know. Pulling the stick and humming their grenade, and throwing them 20 or 30 yards.
So, and then another thing that I found really interesting that I can't say that I knew it. I did it on accident, but he was saying that whenever you do put them on a stringer, that a trout cannot breathe properly if his mouth is open. So they recommended when you put them on a stringer, you put it through the bottom and the top lip. I did it
been doing that for 30 years.
I do it at tournaments because there's two things holding my fish I'm trying to win money with on.
Someone told me that a long, long time ago. No, some people put it in the gill. Some people.
Yeah, the gill is terrible, but I've seen it put through one lip quite often where all the fish have their mouth held open.
Yeah.
And he said those fish won't survive.
You got to do both.
Right.
Yeah. It must have been my dad. I mean, he told me about that years and years ago. So that's good to know. I didn't see that study. All right. So again, I'm only halfway kidding about that's the only way to release hardheads. Halfway kidding. Go ahead and grenade launch them. My point for you, Caleb, and I know you've done this a lot. Scott has too, but you know, you've been in a lot of trout tournaments and live trout tournaments. And then you release some that you know don't make the cut, so to speak. It doesn't take that long to do it right. People think, you know, you see the videos and wiggling the fish in the water for 10 minutes and all that. No, as soon as it just, okay, take us through quick, easy, proper release.
Of the hardhead, I think a t-shirt cannon. What if you had a t-shirt cannon to shoot it at your buddy's boat?
Well, that's a good place to start.
Well, you don't kick them off the dock.
Oh, you don't?
No, yeah, don't do that.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah, my dad did that.
No.
With the trout.
Because people think it's like it's too big of an ordeal.
Yeah,
it's not. It's easy.
To me, that is the payoff for being out there in the first place.
Yeah.
Is holding that great big old tail in your hand, and mm-hmm. they always look so cool when they're sticking out.
They start shaking their butt at you.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I try to keep the fish in the water as much as possible. You know, if you want to take a picture with it, nothing wrong with that. I mm-hmm. take a picture with a lot of my fish.
Yeah,
but the fish is sitting in the water while my buddy's getting his phone out and wiping his hands dry and all that. Then whenever I pick it up, I pick it up. You know, I grab my boga as close as I can to his mouth so he's not swinging everywhere. Mm-hmm. Support his weight with the other hand around his belly or something, and then I set him in the water. And I see guys they'll take the bogus and like figure eight them like yeah. crazy. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. That's not how I do it.
I take it off and just hold the tail.
Yes, yeah. I pull it out of his mouth. I hold her tail and I'll let her sit for just a second. Maybe I'll just kind of pull her back and forth mm-hmm. or shake her back and forth. Just you know, just gently moving water through her gills. And if you haven't had her out of the water long, you know, they're going to go. When the water's hotter, it takes a little bit longer sometimes. When the water's cool, they're going to kick off pretty quick. But to me, that's the payoff for being there. It's like when somebody catches a fish and they reel it in as fast as they can and get in the boat. It's like, hey, that might be the last fish you catch today. You know?
Enjoy it.
Loosen your drag up a little bit. You know, this is why you're here.
How about you? Because to me, the whole process that he just described, catch, you know, grab it. Another thing I've learned, and you guys may have a different opinion from me, is the proper net can sometimes be better than a boga grip if it's not a string net or something, you know, the right polyurethane or whatever they call that stuff. That way you can hold it in the water a little bit. But the whole process from catching, netting, or using the boga, picture, release, 2 minutes?
Less than that.
Yeah.
Less than that.
I mean, I grew up in a time without bogas, and we just hand-grabbed them.
Yeah, you always talk about that.
We just hand-grabbed them. You put your thumb and your middle finger across the top of their back and snagged them.
Squeeze.
And, you know, squeeze it a little bit mm-hmm. and reach down there and unhook them and turn them loose. And generally speaking, they just kicked right off. You know, we didn't have cameras. You know, nobody carried the cameras. We weren't taking
pictures. You
wouldn't
get the pictures until 3 weeks later anyway.
Yeah, we weren't taking pictures of them. We weren't doing anything. We were just catching them and turning them loose. And so that was no time out of the water, so mm-hmm. they kicked off pretty quick. But, you know, with the boga, I do kind of cringe when I see those real big trout being held straight up and down by a boga mm-hmm. with no support. I kind of cringe on that. As there's been some studies out of Florida that – doesn't do them any favors.
Yeah, it does a shock.
It's not about breaking their jaw as much as it is their innards. Yeah, yeah, their guts.
Yeah.
Are used to being in, you know, weight free.
Yeah,
you know, being in the water, they're it's suspended, and then they're not used to gravity.
Yeah,
and so when you hold it up, it kind of pushes down on everything, and that's more on the really really big trout.
Yeah,
and the studies were done on tarpon as well in that same way. And that's why in Florida, you can't take a tarpon out of the water.
You can grab the jaw and that's it, right?
Yeah, you can't bring a tarpon out of the water to take a picture of it.
Yeah, at all. Did you have something else? It looked like you did.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I'll worry about how I need to take a picture of my tarpon later on.
Yeah, when you get to Florida, ask Scott how to do it. All right, so one more that we didn't get to last week that I think is a good timely one for our listeners right now. A lot of guys, water's been fantastic, knock on wood, hitting the jetties. And I promised last week that we were going to give you another question from a listener. A quick everything you need to know about summer jetty fishing primer from two guys that have done a lot of it. And Scott, you and I have talked to groups. We've talked on the podcast about what you're looking for on the jetties. Specific to summer, it's going to be crowded. It's going to be flat. You can probably move around a little better. You can probably see the water's clearer. Than it normally would be another time of year. So a summer jetty fishing primer for a lot of our listeners that are doing that right now.
Also depends on what jetties you're going to.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to the Galveston jetties, you get on that North Jetty, and that's just miles and miles and miles of rock that looks all the same.
Yeah.
I look for dips. You know, if you're looking at the jetties, they look really flat, and then there'll be one little set of rocks that kind of dips down. And all it is a collapse mm-hmm. from underneath, and that's usually indicative of a pass. You know, there's some water is flowing through there some kind of way that's washed it out.
Yeah.
Those are the spots I like to get on because you got a little water movement going through the jetties, and that's pushing bait in and out of the rocks. And the bait's going to try to stay in the rocks. You got waves on the other side pushing it out. Mm-hmm. I've always done better there. The rest of the time, I'm using that side scan a lot as I go down the jetties. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to look and see if I can find me a rock that tumbled off while they were making it. You know, those jetty rocks were being set out there.
Yeah.
You know.
One falls and the guy goes, hey, we got another one.
Yeah.
Let's put it on top.
They're not going to go down there and do anything with it.
Retrieve it. Yeah.
It just rolled down the side. And they're built like a pyramid, you know, coming up. So I like to try to find rocks that are away from the jetties just a little bit. One of them that rolled off, storms knock them off. The other thing is looking for bait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of cruise down through there with that side scan. You'll see little wads of bait down there. Beyond, if you don't have that technology, it's just a matter of rock hopping. You know, just start moving up and down the jetties, looking. It's all the same. And mm-hmm. typically, the redfish seem like they get in an area, and they hold, and it's usually more towards the ends of the jetties, or like at Port O'Connor, you got the little spurs that come out at the base.
I love those, by the way.
There's little holes that wash out around those, and the redfish seem to like to get in a hole more,
mm-hmm.
but the trout just move up and down the jetties. I'm a big believer that, because you could see it a lot of times when I used to fish at Galveston jetties. There'd be a whole line of us,
you know,
all the way down the rocks. And the guy at the far end, boom, everybody's hooked up in that boat, then the next boat, then the next boat. You can see the school coming to you.
Yeah.
And if they got by you and you didn't get hooked up, it was a sad day.
And it was probably your fault, operator error.
Yeah, but not being much of a jetty guy, Scott pretty well hit everything, you know. I like to find low spots with my scan, and I get out on the tips, but mostly I'm just looking for bait and looking for stuff hopping around.
The other thing I wanted to add and get your thoughts on is because it's easy now. Oh, just put your spot lock down. I said that, I think, last week or the week before. Yeah, just go up there, put your spot locked on. You can catch those. I think I was talking about sheephead. You know, get right up on the. Not everybody can have that, you know, on their boat. How would you fish otherwise? You know, I'll start with you, Scott, again, because you've done a lot of it. If you don't have the spot lock, it can be a little dicey out there, especially the waves are moving, the wind's blowing.
And the days of having to have anchor out there, I'm so glad I don't have to do that anymore.
Got a lot of rope.
You lost a lot of anchors.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get down in those cracks in the rocks, and you can't get them out. Yeah. They're done. There used to be some guys that would go out with dive equipment and just load up on anchors and then sell them. There were some guys that were regulars out there that would go out there and pick up anchors during the week and sell them. But we had several different styles of anchors that came along that one of them had kind of a star shape to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good jetty anchor. The chain was hooked onto the shaft with a zip tie.
Oh, cool.
And then the chain was hooked to the bottom of the anchor, you know, on the underside. Mm-hmm. So when you dropped it, it was like it was hooked to the top because of that zip tie.
Yeah.
But if you got it stuck, you could pull on it enough. Usually had to use the boat. Mm-hmm. Pull in the opposite direction would pop that zip tie. Then the anchor would turn upside down and you could bring it up.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was a lot of little things like that that we did.
I can't imagine. I mean, it just takes so much longer now. I can't imagine putting myself back in those days.
I know. I don't even want to think about it, man.
I did that.
But I knew guys that used concrete in a Clorox bottle and drop that down.
Throw it on there.
Yeah, and throw it up into the rocks and get it in the hook. You know,
and who cares if you lose it?
Stuck in the rocks, and then they just cut their line.
Yeah.
Had some of that. You know. Yeah. Something else to look for on the jetties. So there's probably some old timers going to want to hunt me down and shoot me. Mm-hmm. But they used to throw not paint balls, but like a Coke bottle with paint in it whenever they had a really good spot.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd mark the rocks. You could also look along the rocks and you'd see an odd piece of driftwood stuck into the rocks and sticking up, or the lid of an ice chest.
Yeah.
And you think, how did that get there?
Yeah, well,
it was probably put there. You know, everybody, in the days before GPS, everybody had their ways of marking those things. Mm-hmm. So if you saw something odd on the jetties that didn't look like it got there naturally, chances were good somebody did really well right there. It might be a place you want to look at.
Got tagged like graffiti.
Yep.
Those rocks were getting tagged. All right, this is fun, man. I appreciate it. I think we got all the questions for this week. Captain Caleb TV, what's happening, man?
Man, not it. We're going. I finished recording an episode right before I came up here.
Oh,
I've been behind, man.
You were slacking.
Yeah,
you really were. Yeah. I was getting disappointed in you.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've been fishing tournaments. And then I guided almost every day in July, and I got hung up pretty bad. But I got one. We're gonna release it tomorrow. Somehow or another, I gained like 1,100 or 1,200 subscribers in my absence, which is really neat. So we're pushing 10,000 and. I'm really excited about that, and I feel like every time I come on here and say, "Hey, go subscribe to my channel," at least two people do it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's the power of the podcast, of the Black Meat Podcast, right there. And of course, shout out to all the guys that are subscribing and on the group page. Scott's going to be back on the water in no time, I'm sure. But you're not right now. Still, ScottNullPhotography.com. Get some of his pictures too. Get some of the gear that we have for you. Represent. It's always cool when we see somebody on the Facebook page sporting some of our gear. Dean's is like one of our biggest advocates. He gets more listeners down there.
He gets a lot of our listeners go to fish with
and
Dean.
He's got them wearing the gear and he's taking pictures. Yeah. And but get some of your pictures as well. That the wildlife photography that you do, that it blows me away. Some of the stuff, you can go to scottnullphotography.com there. And of course, don't forget Deadly Dudley real quick. You can use, Jay Lopez as your promo code there. Somebody texted, I was reading some fishing board. It wasn't on our page. It was on another one. Said, "Hey, anybody know about this electric chicken? I hear John Lopez pumping it up all the time on the podcast." It's really good. So go to deadlydudley.com and give Paul a little shout out. Jay Lopez is the code. I've been using the clear with shrimp color, as well. So that's been good. All good. I'm not going to say what would Scott do this week. So pay attention, Caleb. Because I see you doodling over there.
I'm doodling.
He's in the back of the class talking to his neighbor, and the teacher just saw. What you had something else before I go there.
Yeah, hunting season's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
We don't all just fish.
No, we don't.
I hunt a good bit, too. In fact, I'm leaving here to go pick up my deer head from last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, taxidermist called.
Yeah.
Connie Mack down there.
Yeah.
Creative Feathers down Lamarck. He called me and said my deer was ready. But on the way over here, I went by a place called Chaz Mack.
Mm-hmm.
They're out off 290.
Mm-hmm.
Feeders that they make in-house.
Chaz Mack.
Chaz Mack. C-H-A... S-MAC.
Okay.
Cool little place. Really nice people. Shauna, she just couldn't be more helpful.
Okay.
And I'm looking at some feeders and some deer stands and stuff like that. They make it all there in-house. And they, I'm telling you, these feeders are bulletproof looking.
I got to look at them.
They're awesome.
I got to look at them.
And I think I may be...
You're in the market?
I think I might be buying some.
All right.
You know, got to get the grandkids in.
So normally we say, what would Scott do? He'll be back on the water in no time, but he's not going to be this week. What would Caleb do? That's a new one.
I'll tell you what Caleb's going to do. I'll tell you what.
You're giving us away all the secrets.
Yeah, there you go. I have trips this weekend. I'm going to be out there early while the water's still cool and the sun gets up, before the sun gets up too high. I'm going to be fishing on Friday. I'm going to be fishing deep reefs. And in my bay, that's, 5 or 6 feet of water. I'm going to be hitting it early, probably trying to get what I need done by 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
We have a full moon out, so there should be another bite between 12 and 3, but it's going to be so stinking hot, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah.
And then later in the evenings, that's my game on Friday is just deeper shell earlier when the water's cooler. And then on Saturday, I have waders. I am, again, going to be out there early. I don't know if the tide's coming or going that morning just yet, but I'm going to be playing wherever I think the deeper water is pulling to shallower water, whether it's a dropping or incoming tide.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether that be, deeper water is what I'm after right now, though. I just want to get out of that hot stuff.
You heard it from the man right there.
I'm going to be throwing beetle spins on the Lake Knoll.
The Lake Knoll is going to be hopping.
Yeah.
When you're with the one-armed bandit over there.
I can still flip. I got from my elbow down works.
Really can be a little dicey.
I flip it, and then I got it set up to reel with my left hand, so... I've been catching bass pretty much every afternoon.
You got to get a video of that. We got to get somebody to get a video of that.
It's a kick, man. I have a blast out there.
That's funny.
He just got done telling us how his doctor's going to tell him that he cannot do a thing for 6 months. I give him 6 days.
Is his doctor a fisherman? Because she just found out.
Yeah, she's about to learn.
She's about to learn. All right, guys, man. Hey, appreciate it. Really fun episode. Next week, we got already a litany of questions in line for you, so we'll get to that. Catch a bunch of fish, do what Caleb does, and we'll talk to you next time. Until then, have a good trip.